Welcome to Journals of a Healer. As host of Journals of a Healer, Unleash Your Hidden Potential, I strive to showcase the many facets of our guests and inspire audience members to express their own greatness now, not someday. We all come in with a unique combination of talents, strengths, and qualities, the raw material of our future selves. In the process of learning the rules, pleasing everyone, and trying to do things right, we forget what we came here for, and our true genius may never be expressed. I'm Mary Blake, Catalyst for Change. My guests and I hope to inspire you to be everything you can possibly be. The world needs you. Today, I'm excited to talk with Sue Ellen Clayton, an author, speaker, and business coach who teaches creative women how to write their own blogs, newsletters, and website content. She especially loves working with women who want to have a presence online but face challenges that limit their writing. So I'm not going to hold you in suspense any longer. Let's just say hello to Sue Ellen and let's go.
Hi, Mary.
Hi. So I was just wondering, noticing how accomplished you are and everything that you're doing. I was just wondering, what did you think you were going to be when you were young?
Well, actually, from when I was a very young girl, I wanted to be a writer, and I did a lot of writing as a kid. I wrote my first novel when I was 6, and I continued to write throughout my life. But when I was in high school, I just did not – I really believed no one could make a living as a writer. And so I ended up going through to business school and becoming an accountant, and – eventually, my life led me back to writing, and that's what I'm doing again.
Well, good for you. It sounds like you came full circle, which a lot of people never manage to do. But as an accountant, how was that for you, a creative gal?
Oh, it was awful. It was awful. And, you know, it was funny because I really believe that we, as you do, we have things we should be in life. And every time I have veered from the direction of writing, something has happened that has kind of slapped me in the side of the face and said, no, you need to be a writer. And so I had all sorts of things happen as an accountant. I had terrible people I worked with. I had people doing things that they shouldn't have been doing that I found out about. I mean, it was just a lot of... it was not something that I enjoyed or was meant to do. So when I turned, I guess in my early 30s, we were living in Canada where I was born, and my husband got transferred to the U.S. And I decided at that point that I wasn't going to renew my accounting certification and relearn, you know, the U.S. tax code because it was bad enough learning the Canadian one. And that's when I decided to open up my own writing business. And it was just, I concentrated on working with businesses so I could still use the business education I had, but it also gave me the ability to express myself through writing.
Well, that sounds like it was just a happy accident. Of course, you know, we know there are no coincidences. So it sounds like somebody up there somewhere wanted you to really be a writer, huh?
Well, it's funny. I do believe that. And a few years ago, we moved from Arizona, where we were living, to Long Island. And I'm a very avid quilter. And I decided that the kids were getting ready to go to college, and, you know, tuition was looming. And I decided I was going to open an accounting business. And 6 weeks after I did that and invested a whole pile of money, and we did part of our house so we could have a home office and whatever, I got hit by a car and herniated all the discs in my neck. And it meant that I could not continue long-term with this quilting business. And lo and behold, I'm back in the writing business again. So, I think I've got the me- message now that that's what I'm meant to be doing, and, you know, nothing else has to happen to me.
I say sometimes God just has to shove you off a cliff to get you straightened out, huh?
I actually think that is true. That really is true. And it's hard to realize that as you're going through it, that maybe in the long term you're going to be where you're supposed to be. But that has been the case in my life. It's like, I'm stuck with writing, I promise. Nothing else is going to happen to me.
My spirit guide always says that some things have a peculiar way of going right. They start out looking like a disaster.
Yeah.
So you in your writing, what do you think is the most important thing that has come out of it?
I think it is the recognition that women need to be more visible, and that a lot of us who are, say, over 45 or 50 have so much potential, have so much to offer the world, have so many gifts, and we grew up being told, don't brag, don't talk about yourself, don't show off, don't be a know-it-all. And I've really recognized that has held a lot of people back, myself included. And
I love
the idea that now I'm able to work with women and help them understand that what they have to say is of great value. And they just need a little bit of encouragement to understand, no, I'm not bragging. I am actually servicing people. And I love helping them learn to do that.
And you know, there's also, as young girls, we are taught that boys don't like smart girls.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Isn't that terrible?
It is, and I don't know if that's still the case. I mean, I have a daughter who's almost 18, and I don't see her struggling with that like, you know, I struggled with that. But, boy, that was certainly a message that I got growing up.
Yeah, you know, it's amazing, and I'm glad to hear you say that you feel that it may be changing around. I know my girls never got that message, for sure.
Right.
They were always praised for their ingenuity and their brilliance, and it's a totally different thing. But I do believe there was a time, especially, when women were taught, you know, to say the right things, to be cute and to be charming and to flatter people and to be modest and feminine.
Right, and to be very demure and quiet. And yeah, absolutely. I mean, I can remember my mother when I was newly married, and, you know, my husband would come to visit, my mother would, like, get drinks for the boys, but the girls would get their own drinks. Like, there was definitely a mentality that you served the boys for whatever reason. So that doesn't exist in my house either right now.
Good.
Yeah.
So, one of the things that you seem to be saying is mindset and skills.
Mm-hmm.
I believe you're saying that you promote that you're dedicated to that.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I really think that so much of what women have to offer, and I work almost totally with women, so. I love working with women, and I kind of relate to them. I think so much of what we have to overcome is just ourselves, is believing that, yes, we can do it. And it's funny how high we set the bar. Like when I started my writing business, and now I'm learning to do stuff in video. And of course, I'm not comparing myself to somebody else who started doing video a few weeks ago. I'm comparing myself to someone who's been doing video for 15 years. You know, so we're very hard on ourselves. And I think the mindset that you can be a beginner and you can learn and you can be farther along than someone else and have something to offer someone who's not as far along as you are is really a great, it's just a great thing for us. We're not going to be, only one person can be number one, and, you know, it may not be us, but we certainly, that doesn't mean that we don't have a lot to offer other people.
Well, number one in what?
Well, yeah, exactly. I think that's, we, you know, am I going to be like the number one bestseller, you know, New York Times bestseller? Am I going to be, you know, winning an Academy Award or a global, you know, Nobel Peace Prize? What, you know, yeah,
sure.
We're choosing. What is number one? I don't even know what that is.
it's really true. And yet many of us quit before we even start because we just assumed that we could never whatever.
Oh, and perfectionism is just so hard. It's hard to get over. And it's interesting. I've just, because of my back problems, my doctor recommended that I learn Tai Chi. And Tai Chi is incredibly complicated. It's something that people study for decades and still have more to learn. So I think I've had 8 classes at this point, and I am so clearly the worst person in the class that has no idea what's going on. But I really go into it thinking, okay, the only way I can get better is to do it and do it imperfectly, and in a year I'm going to be a lot better than I am now. So I really try to model that idea that, you know, we start where we are and we'll get better.
You know, Sue Ellen, I really think that the greatest and the most valuable competition in the entire world is against your own last best.
Yeah. I think that's very true.
Everybody does things differently, and only you know if you go a quarter of an inch further into those poses than you did last session. You know what I mean?
Right.
And if you concentrate on that and congratulate yourself for every advancement that you make, no matter what it is and no matter what you're doing, you've got to somehow wind up with an amazing sense of peace with yourself and a sense of achievement.
And, you know, I would say that, as you said that, it made me think, I don't even know that we have to beat our best every time. I mean, I write, and some days I write better than other days. And I think that's a pressure we put on ourselves, too, that can't I just go to Tai Chi and enjoy it? Like, do I have to be better every time? Or can I just be part of the experience? And, yeah, over time I'll get better, but maybe this week I'm not, and I just want to enjoy it for moving my body and learning something different. So that whole competitive thing, I'm not sure how well it serves us when it does. I think it serves us in our career and it serves us in certain areas, but do we need to compare our whole life to our previous best? I don't know that makes everything better.
Okay. Well, I will think strongly about that because of course I don't always do that, but I mean, I was thinking of my own progress in yoga, and I know that as I was first learning it was amazing that I could literally feel myself going a little bit further each time, and it was just that focus and concentration on me and what I was doing instead
right.
of what anybody next to me. And of course in yoga you're always taught that everybody is different and that
right.
and that you may be better at one pose than the person next to you, and they might be better at another motion than you were, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so you cannot really compare yourself to other people in any way.
Right. No, I like that idea, and I like that idea of, you know, going with what your previous best was or your previous experience. It just made me think, like, do we, you know, can you just go to yoga, and if you're enjoying moving farther, then that's a good thing. But if you're going
yeah.
to yoga with the mindset that, okay, today I have to be a quarter of an inch better, then that just kind of takes the enjoyment out of it.
I was completely aware of it because
mm-hmm.
yoga makes you so aware of your body and what's going
right.
on.
Right.
And to me that's the fascinating thing of feeling myself going, and then when I don't do it I notice that I'm not as quite as agile and
mm-hmm.
It's just the way, and I say to myself, oh, well, 2 or 3 days and I'll be back in shape, you know, no big
right.
deal.
Right.
But it helps you to become more aware of yourself and I think
yes.
what you're doing.
Yes, absolutely.
But I would love to get into kind of the step-by-step. How did you get from where you were as finally deciding that you were really meant to be a writer? How did you re-begin getting back onto your original track?
Well, as I said, we moved from Canada to the United States, and I knew that writing was my love and my passion. So I just decided I'm going to, once I got my green card and I could work, about 3 days later, I signed up for my, I started my writing business, and it just fell into place very quickly with magazine articles and working for people. So it wasn't really at that point that difficult. And then I had two children, and my husband was traveling, my son was sick, and I just at that point decided, you know, I can't do it all. I can't be a mom. I can't work. I can't deal with health problems. So I stopped for a number of years and homeschooled my kids. And then, as I told you, I got back into quilting, and I started writing a quilting blog in 2010, and I blogged every day. And people started following my blog, and I met a lot of quilting friends. And after I got injured and had to close down my quilting business, I had a number of people say, can you just blog for me? Will you ghost blog? You know, I'd really love you to write my blog for me. So I did that for, I guess, a couple of years. And then I uh-huh. just really felt that I was tired of ghostwriting. I had been behind the scenes for a whole lot of years, and it was really time for me to come forward and take a more visible role, really. And there's the metaphor of being a ghostwriter. I mean, that is someone who writes for people in secret, essentially, and doesn't get credit for what they're doing.
Right,
and I just
right.
didn't want to do that anymore. And so it was a big step for me to kind of not be a ghost anymore and be in front of the world.
That was a major change. How did it work for you? Where did you feel kind of funny at being sort of awkward and how did it work for you?
Terribly. And
okay.
I I just had, especially with the quilting business failing, that I just felt terrible about that. That was the first thing in my life that really had not, that had really failed. And I was very low on self-esteem. And you know, I'd been out of the workforce, mostly homeschooling my kids. And I went to a small business association counselor. And I actually thought she was going to laugh at me when I told her that I had been a ghostwriter for 20 years and I wanted to start, you know, this business. And she looked at the work I'd done, and she got to know me, and she was like, "Girl, you got to stop hiding on these people. You got to get out there." And she really ended up being an incredible encouragement that, you know, I was just missing some skills I had to learn. And so I really...
Now, wait a minute. Let's stop right here, because you said something magical. You have said something magical. You were missing some of the skills you needed to learn.
Yes.
And most women lack those skills.
Mm-hmm.
And even a lot of men, too. I mean, many men lack the skills of promoting themselves. They docilely do the job they're told to do. Some of them are still in the same job that their guidance counselor sent them to in high school, you know? But my goodness, the one thing I learned from my super salesman husband was that you can have the best thing in the world, and if nobody knows you have it, you might as well not have it.
Oh, yeah. And the other part of that is, a lot of times the people are successful, it doesn't mean they have the best product. It just means they're the best person at marketing what they do.
Yeah.
And
so you actually help people learn to, you, well, first you had to learn it yourself. How did you go about that?
I did a lot of stumbling, I have to tell you. But I did. I went to a lot of seminars, like the one I met you at a couple of weeks ago. So sort of roundtables and one-day seminars and three-day seminars. And I think I was looking for what the magic secret bullet was, and really learned that there is no magic secret bullet. You just have to be yourself and have confidence in what you do. So that was one thing. And then I also hired a sales coach, and he has been very instrumental in kind of helping to encourage me. So that was a big help. And I don't know, just at one point my mindset shifted, and I felt like, this is my business and this is what I'm meant to do. And all people can do is say no to me. It's not, it's like, that's okay. It's okay. And I actually went to an event last weekend, and I introduced myself to 200 vendors at this show and told them what I did.
Really?
And gave them chocolate and some information on me. And I just thought, what is the worst thing that can happen? People are going to say, you know, I don't like you. I don't like what you do. I don't want you. I don't want you. And almost everybody was, one, grateful for the chocolate, and secondly, didn't know someone like me existed. And so they would say, you know, oh, you in the other booth, come here and listen to this lady. Or they would tell me some of the challenges they had, and I would give them some suggestions. And so it's, I think, coming from a place where you're there to help rather than I think as women, we're all about relationships. And I've recognized that this whole marketing, selling, serving thing is not about trying to force my will on people and grab their money. It's about offering something that will help. And if I can help, then great. You know, I'd love to do it.
That sounds mighty good. So you really have taken some interesting steps to get into the position where you can actually help people to do what you've done. That's wonderful.
And the other thing that I did that I didn't mention was I took two coaching certifications, and I realized that it's very interesting when you're a ghostwriter because when you deal with people's writing anyway, because people are very, a lot of times, ashamed of their writing or their ability to write, or they're wanting to write about something that is maybe, I keep thinking of the word shame, but they're not proud of, or they're ashamed of, or they have emotional ick around. So in all my years as a writer, I really did a lot of coaching without even knowing that was what I was doing. And
yeah,
so
I know what you mean.
Yeah, so taking the coaching certification kind of gave me a way to understand formally what I had just been doing naturally, and that really helped build my confidence as well.
That's good. That's what a course like that should be for.
Mm-hmm.
I think that if you are a natural coach, you're doing it, but you don't give yourself credit for it.
Right, exactly. And it's funny, being someone who is quiet and introverted, I'm so much more comfortable listening to people than I am
uh-huh.
talking. And so I naturally, that makes me a good coach for some people, not for other people. But I've also
mm-hmm.
always been extremely sensitive. And when I was growing up, that was always a bad thing. You know, that was a very shameful thing, to be too sensitive. And now I realize that is an incredible strength, that I can understand
yes, it is.
People. I'm compassionate. I'm very proud of the fact now that I am sensitive. And that has been
mm-hmm.
something that I could only say in maybe the last 6 months, that is really one of my greatest strengths.
Well, what happened in the last 6 months that you finally recognized this and accepted it?
I think the fact that I started coaching people and realizing, and they would say to me, "You're really insightful. Oh, my God, you're really insightful." And I started realizing that I really am, and that I've had a lot of insight throughout my life that I've tried to explain away or hide or, you know, blame myself for being too sensitive. And I really made a decision that I was going to honor that part of me, and when something came to mind, I was going to say it. And the more you use that sensitivity or insight or compassion, whatever you call it, the stronger it gets. And that has it surprises people when you ask them a question that is kind of out of left field, and they stop for a minute and go, "Oh, yeah, that, like, how did you know?" And so it has become, and I know you know this, just about trusting myself and having the courage to say something when it pops into my mind. And at first I would just say to people, "You know, I'm really trying to improve my intuition, and this just came to mind, so does this mean anything to you?" And they'd be like, sometimes they'd say no, and sometimes they'd be like, "Oh, wow, yeah." So
uh-huh.
I think I'm just developing confidence in who I really am.
And now maybe you can say it without the preamble?
That I am developing confidence in who I am?
No, that you can just say when you have an instinct or, yeah, you just go ahead and say it without saying, giving them an excuse for doing it.
Right, exactly. Now I'm more comfortable, but in the beginning, I really prefaced it with, you know, kind of the weasel words so that they didn't think I was too unusual.
Maybe too pushy or too
impertinent,
maybe. I went through things like that, and I don't know. You sometimes we think we're the only one. You know, when you're young, you're the only one who's ever had an experience like that. But the longer I live, and the more people I know, the more I realize how much we do have in common. As different as we are, there are so many things that are parallel in growing up, growing into our human, in our spiritual beings. That it gives you a tender feeling to other people.
It does. And what I think is so wonderful about our online world now is that people can find each other. When I grew up in a very small town in Canada, and there were not, we all tried to be the same. And so if you had anything that was the least bit different about you, you just felt like you didn't fit in. Well, now you can go online and there's whole communities of people who think like you do or act like you do or, you know, have interests mm-hmm. that you do. And so I think it's really a wonderful thing that we're able to be connected and not just feel alone and different. And, you know, as when we were talking about just being young girls and shamed for various things, I think in my generation, our parents wanted us to grow up and all be the same. You know, we were to be good girls and we were to get married and we were to do all these things. And now there's just so many more opportunities open because we have this wonderful, you know, world that we have access to.
Mm-hmm. And of course I'm from a generation even before yours. But I grew up in a small town in southern Illinois.
Okay.
But I somehow from the very beginning I wanted to be different.
Wow.
And yet I suffered from it. I wanted to, and yet I suffered from it. So, you know, that's kind of strange, but it was a dichotomy. But I suffered a lot.
See, I think that's very brave to be willing to know that you want that for yourself.
Yeah, and I discovered the book A Stranger in a Strange Land in my teen years, and I thought sure it was written for me.
Wow. Wow. Very cool. Yeah, I think that now there's clearly, I think it's still clearly hard being a kid and it's hard being a teen, but at least there's resources that we didn't have. And, you know, you particularly, I'm almost 55, so I know you are older than I am.
Oh my goodness, I have children who are younger or older than you. You're just a baby.
I don't know, but look at what you're doing with, like, your blog talk radio. And, I mean, I think, and this is why I love working with women and working with women who are older. I just think we have such incredible talents to figure things out and get our message out there. So once you take that step, you know, we just fly. We soar. So, you know, good for you for doing this.
Thank you. Well, and look at how lucky our audience is that my doing this has brought them you.
So. Oh, thank you. Thank you so much.
Yeah, so it's so fantastic that how does it feel now to just present a piece of writing as your own work and claim it as the author? After all those years of hiding behind someone else's name and letting them get all the credit for your brilliance, my goodness.
It feels good. I did during that period. I did also publish in magazines and newspapers and stuff. So I definitely had the byline experience, which, you know, is a real high when you go to in the old days when we used to go to a store and there were magazines and like you could find your work in a magazine was really cool. But it is a really great feeling. I've published a number of books, and I really do like seeing my work with my name on it. And I'm very proud.
Kind of articles did you write at the beginning?
I wrote small business articles. So I was the first home office. This is how long ago it was. Home offices were just starting. And I was the home office columnist for Business Startup Magazine, which was owned by Entrepreneur. And I interviewed this strange group of people that had offices in their homes. And I did that for a number of years. I'm thinking now maybe a couple of years. And it was just great. I got to talk to people all over the country about what they did from their home office and how they made it work. And I also wrote a lot of articles on sort of business starting up kind of stuff, like what can a graphic designer do for you and what can, you know, do you need an accountant? I also worked for a business magazine in Arizona and that profiled leaders of large businesses, and they would have me call them because I had I had such a good business background that I could talk the CEO language, and they it was almost all men liked talking to me because I knew what I was talking about, and I liked writing about what they were doing. So that's kind of how I started. And it's interesting to me how much the writing world has changed, because back in those days, a couple of things. One is if you were a small business and you wanted, say, a brochure, you would hire a graphic designer and you would hire a writer and you would hire a photographer and you would go to a printer and they would create stuff for you. And now we expect that as a small business, we take our own photos and we do our own, you know, printing and we do our own layouts and we create our own websites and we write our own newsletters. Mm-hmm. And somewhere in that 20-year period, we've just expected that people become experts at all of this publishing stuff. And it's hard for people. You know, it's not necessarily something that comes easily. And a lot of times people went into a career, say 20 or 30 years ago, they became an accountant or they became a chiropractor or they became an artist because they didn't like to write or because they didn't like to take photos or because they didn't like to be in front of the camera. And now we have this world where we want people to blog and we want people to have YouTube videos and we want people to have podcasts and they're almost in shock. It's like I didn't sign up for this. I wanted to be a chiropractor so I could just see people one-on-one and be in my office. So I've really seen a change.
You know, years ago in one of my many separate lives I've lived in this one, I was in the advertising business, and my then husband and I were working as de facto employees of newspapers, and we would put out a trade area directory, which would expand the newspaper's access to advertisers, you know. And I would interview the people who had contracted for an ad and find out what they actually did and help them to understand that they had to, you know, a contractor did paper, wire and paper. And I said, well, what is wire and paper? And, I mean, this was a whole page ad copy he had given me, you know. What is it? Ad and wire and paper. Well, everybody knows. everybody knows. I'm sure all your competitors know, but a housewife doesn't know what wire and paper does. What is it for, and what is it really? Well, it's you when you prepare, it's the way you prepare a house for siding or for some kind of facade to go on it. I mean, like stucco the stone or what, this, that, or the other thing. So I had to literally pull it out of him so that I could tell people what he did and let them know that he was there when they wanted it. Even sometimes they didn't even know that it was available and they could have it.
Right.
So to expect now for people to become advertising geniuses and promote their own products and their own companies is a terrible strain on them, I think, and it's asking something that's beyond their capacity. So in a way, it's sort of like Mickey Mouse in Fantasia. That he memorized the magician's formula to start the mop to mopping the floor, but then he didn't know how to stop it.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
You're absolutely right, and it's so hard to do this stuff on our own because we're not objective. So not only is it a burden where you're doing your marketing and your advertising and your writing and your photography and all that stuff, but doing it on ourselves, we just don't have enough perspective to do it. And there's a reason that physicians do not treat their family members or themselves. You know, you need someone outside of you. And somehow in this whole do-it-yourself world, it's not only that there's so much pressure on you to do it yourself, but you just don't have the ability to stand back from ourselves. And I know I see it with people writing and trying to, you know, for their website, write the about me section or when, you know, somebody like you wants a biography of you. And people just, it's very, very hard to write about yourself.
It really is. It really is.
Or photograph yourself or design your own logo or, you know, any of that.
And a lot of times you have abilities that you don't even know until somebody asks you to help them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's true. It's true. And it feels good to help people.
It really does.
Yeah.
And I think there's, in a way, there's almost too much emphasis on the physical and the ordinary ways of trying to fit into doing a job very, very not enough on the creative and the beauty and the spiritual. There's a spiritual part of everything that we do, and most of us today don't even get into that.
Yeah, I think that becomes it is so important, the spiritual part, and particularly a spiritual connection when you're dealing with anything creative. And I think all of us deal with creativity in our own way. You don't have to just be a painter or a wordsmith to deal with creativity.
That's for
but
sure.
I'm one of the things that I teach people with writing, they're always asking me, like, how can you be so productive? How do you have so many ideas? Why don't you ever run out of ideas? And that is because I really take creativity as a gift, and I absolutely honor it. And when I have an idea, I have a plan so that I can write those ideas down. I will stop the car and, you know, dictate it into my phone or make a note in my journal in my purse or whatever. I just really feel that creativity is a spiritual gift, and it's a two-way thing. You have to listen for the ideas to continue to come. So as I get older, I see that that's more and more important in life and in what I do. And I think, I know certainly for me, training as an accountant, there really wasn't a whole lot of credence given to anything spiritual in my world. And that has changed.
For sure.
That definitely has changed, yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, you know, if I could attribute one word to you, I would say inspiration.
Oh, thank you. That's very nice to hear. And
because I think you are very inspiring, and I think you inspire others, and I think you're not the least embarrassed about kind of thrashing around until you hit on that inspirational trail, you know?
Well, I think it's interesting because as I've gone through this journey, and I'm pretty honest about where I've come from with people, and I feel that a lot of women really relate to me. You know, they've been through the career thing or the mom thing and the, you know, thrashing around in middle age thing and kind of...
Yeah.
It's not a straight A to B journey for all of us, and we're all evolving. So, you know, who knows in 3, 5, or 10 years where any of us will be. But I think that we all need to allow ourselves to become who we really are, whatever that takes. And I don't see it so much in myself, but I see it in the people I work with, and it just inspires me all the time. So that's
right.
Really nice to be referred to that way.
Okay. So, but I have noticed as I kind of checked your website, and I noticed that somehow you have managed to take all of the tragedies and all of the very difficult situations, many of which could have left people bitter, and you have turned it into a doorway into a future that you didn't expect to inhabit.
Mm-hmm. That's a really nice way of putting it. Yeah. Yeah, I think that's true. And I love that idea that it's a doorway. You know, it really has become that. And I love, one thing I love about writing and blogging, I really try and give, I try to be very personal about it and then let people sort of open their doorway. So I do write about everything from, you know, funny stuff like making fudge with my son over Christmas and having it not turn out, to, you know, my dog having seizures, to, you know, I write about really real life. But I also do that to model for people that people are buying or from us or attracted to us because of us. So there's a lot of business coaches out there. There's a lot of writers out there. There's a lot of, you know, healers. People want to know, like, me or know you so they can grow to understand us. And I try to be transparent so that people can really look into my life. Now, that being said, and I always, you know, caution people to be careful of what you're saying and particularly who you're saying it about. So I'm very careful with my children, and you'll notice in my blog I might say something like, you know, my son got a fish as a pet, but I would never talk about his personal relationships. And so I'll kind of mention my children tangentially, but I won't be, you know, I'm always very mindful of their privacy. So I try to blog about things that are personal to me that don't affect other people and might make them uncomfortable. And I also feel like in writing, I And people blog and people create newsletters for very different reasons, and that's totally cool. But I love when people read my stuff that they feel uplifted afterwards, that maybe they laugh, that maybe they feel a little bit poignant, but they really come away, it's a positive part of their day. And that makes me feel good.
That is important, isn't it? It really is important.
I think
it is. I agree. You said you have brought up something that I think is kind of special. Many times, in I guess the old paradigm, teachers and so important people, the people who had something to say to you to mold your life, could never show their imperfections.
Mm-hmm.
And if they see that you're just ordinary, they won't follow you. And
mm-hmm.
I think this, what you have just said, shows something very special about you. And it's very courageous to admit your flaws, I think.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that. Yeah, I think when we admit we are, you know, it kind of depends, I guess, what position you're in. I'm thinking that I don't want to see my surgeon talking about how he screwed up on his last 4 surgeries, you know, or we have to understand what world we're in. And so for me,
mm-hmm.
working with women and working with being more visible in the world, admitting my reservations and what I struggle with works, but it wouldn't work for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, yeah, you have to know your, that's another thing I tell people about writing. You have to know your audience, and excuse me, my audience appreciates that I am vulnerable, but there are people who are writing about, you know, medical issues or other things that you definitely would not want that to be out there.
Well, I think I would really want to know that they are open to learning. I have a big, big problem with the people who seem to think that everything has already been discovered,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
and that they know it all. And I guess that's a real turnoff to me. And I just sort of don't trust people who are not willing to admit that they are constantly learning.
Yeah, and I think the vulnerability, I'll just give you a local example of, and I'm sorry if this is too much information, but a couple of years ago I had to see a colorectal surgeon. Okay, nobody wants to see somebody who's going to be in that part of your body. And I looked online, and there was a guy locally, and in his bio, he said that he had been a resident at a university on Long Island, and his dad had developed colon cancer, and eventually he had passed away from it. And because of that happening, this doctor went on to specialize in colorectal surgery and help people who had, you know, issues with colon cancer and other things.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
I just had such a fond feeling towards him because he showed that he had made a decision out of something greater than just wanting to, you know, make money or have good hours or
mm-hmm.
whatever. Like I felt like, wow, this man is really invested in what he's doing. And
yes.
He was who I chose, and he was a wonderful doctor. So I think that showed to me a vulnerability and a willingness to learn that I thought was incredible. So it can work for everybody.
There you go.
I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
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 Absolutely. I think that this is something that is so valuable to keep in mind. And when you are searching for someone, their motivation is tremendous. It is something that is very powerful to know that they are doing it for a reason that is an admirable reason, and
right.
not just to make money.
Yeah, like the idea of setting an intention, and his intention was to keep people from dying from colon cancer. How awesome is that, to know you're going to work every morning with that being your goal?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And how awesome it is to know that you, every time you sit down to write, you are reaching out toward people to give them a better handle on their own lives. I think that's wonderful, and to be able in your own way to make it possible for them to tell the world who they are and what they can do. This is a wonderful thing to do when you teach. When you teach people to blog better, how do you go about that?
Well, first we have to do mindset stuff. So basically the idea is that you have something to say that people want to hear. So that's the first step, and that's actually a lot harder than it sounds with some people. And then it's helping people to decide who is your audience and what can you blog about, and helping people realize it doesn't have to be the big things. Somehow in our heads we think, oh, I'm going to write a blog, it has to be about, you know, overcoming breast cancer and, you know, volunteering and all these big events in life. And it doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
It can be something very small, and I deal a lot with quilters, and, you know, we quilters love our fabric. So just letting people realize, look at your day, look at what you're interested in, look at what your audience is interested in. So as you're unpacking that new fabric from the vendors, take a picture of it. That's a great blog post, or that's great in your newsletter. Or if someone comes into your shop and they've made a quilt for their baby or their first quilt or any quilt, take a picture of it and, you know, blog about your customers. So I really just try and help women realize it's easier than they think. And it doesn't have to be about anything huge. It just has to be about something that reflects them and interests their customers or their audience. So that's the next part of the process. And then I just try and break it down for them into what are some easy ways to post. What are a lot of people, too, we deal with issues around writing where they were told, you know, they were a lousy writer or they came to a conclusion that they couldn't write. So we deal with a lot of that. And then I teach them some easy ways to write, some easy blog posts. And then how to do an editorial calendar, so how to plan what you're going to be doing in the future. And a lot of times when I start working with them, it's like anything. You start working with someone, there's one reason you start working with them, but other issues come up and you realize, oh, I really could use some help with this. And so, you know, a lot of times our work takes maybe different directions than just the writing, and that helps support people as they grow in confidence.
That's great. That's absolutely wonderful. Could you tell our audience where to get in touch with you?
Oh, I would love to tell them that. So my website is SueAllenClayton.com. And it's Allen, A-L-L-E-N, and Clayton, C-L-A-Y-T-O-N.com. I have a free newsletter, which I would love to have people to sign up for. My email address is sue@sueallenclayton.com, and they're welcome to email me. And I love to hear from people. I love to talk to people, and it would be my honor to speak with some of your guests.
Well, that's fantastic. It has absolutely been inspiring to have you with us today. And we usually end these interviews with a brief guided imagery. Are you willing to go along with that?
Sure.
Okay, so close your eyes.
Okay.
And tense your body, and just imagine your whole body as a fist, and begin to feel it trembling. And when you feel it trembling, just collapse like a rag doll, and just let out a big sigh. And notice how totally relaxed your body is. And now focus your concentration completely, all of your concentration, beneath your nose. And as you breathe, begin to ride on that breath. Just surf on that breath and just float inward. As you exhale, just let go of anything that is between you and complete fulfillment and happiness and ability to do whatever you want to do. Just let all of that go. Blow it away. As you take another breath, float inward, deeper and deeper through the layers of consciousness. Again, letting go of all tension, all confusion, all irritation, everything that usually is interfering with our being our best. Float deeper and deeper until you find yourself in that perfect ideal place within us, where nothing could possibly harm you, where everything is available, all of the support, all the love, all the freedom to be that can possibly happen to you. And just soak it up. Just fill yourself with this incredible, wonderful sense of well-being in the perfect place, in the perfect time, with the perfect, perfect equipment, in the perfect energy, in the perfect wisdom to do everything and anything that you would like to do. And then take a deep breath and sort of stretch a little bit. Wiggle your fingers and toes. Open your eyes. And in complete refreshment and invigoration, have a wonderful day. Love and light.
Thank you. It's been such a pleasure talking to you and to your audience. It's been a great way to spend the middle of the day.
Fantastic. We won't forget you. You'll probably be hearing from some of us.
Good. And I hope I see you again soon.
We can arrange that.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye. And love and light.